Hello, would you please state your full name, the date, the time, and your location?
My name is Natasha Thompson. It is July 26, 2022. It is 11:59 a.m. and I am in Clarksville, Tennessee.
And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license, attribution, non-commercial, share alike?
Yes, I consent.
Thank you so much. Would you please start by telling me a little bit about yourself? What would you want people listening to this to know about you?
Well, I'm an energy one of my practices I do, I'm an energy therapist and a hypnotherapist in Clarksville, Tennessee. And I also am really big on providing affordable housing in our community and outside of our community. And one of my biggest goals is to have a amazing retreat in Mount Shasta, California.
Tell me a story about your life during the pandemic.
During the pandemic, I see a story of my life during the pandemic. In the beginning, I had a business that I ran for 20 years. And I had left that, I had bought out of that business and I had started my energy therapy practice that we were just talking about. And out of nowhere, my husband wanted to get into assisting people with affordable housing. So I had to take like a W-2 job to go and get income, extra income for capital to get everything started for that avenue. And so 4 years of what's it like? Almost 4 years of doing my energy therapy practice to a month and a half after that, that's when the COVID had started. So I had just went back into the work, I guess a W-2 type of job. And that's when it had happened. And I remembered when it happened, the first thing that I was, because I do a lot of meditation, the first thing that I heard was, internally was, stay out of any type of fear. And the story that stands out the most about the COVID, that experience with the pandemic was just being the light for so many people. I remember our business was only closed where I worked at for maybe a month because I am in Tennessee and there was a lot of activists here that kept our businesses open. But I remember when I remember being the light around people saying, stay out of fear. Stay in love, stay in light. What does, God has to offer for you? So that's the main story that I remember. One of the a story that stood out about that incident was I was at work and one of the guys was at work and he was acting really nervous because he was assisting customers. And prior to that, he was really into the Bible. He read the Bible every single day. Like that's all you talked about was reading the Bible before the pandemic. And me, I was raised with Christianity, and he was acting like really scared. And I said to him, you have the blood of Jesus all over you. You remember your practices? He goes, you are right. And he just stopped. And that was constantly doing that for everybody around me. And so many people prosper. People purchase homes and people got married and like found love. And it was just a beautiful thing for me doing that experience, just watching people like grow through a fear they had and then seeing, wait, reality is what's in front of me, And just helping people work through the fear was just a beautiful thing.
I'd love to hear more about your spiritual journey.
My spiritual journey started when I was younger, like a kid. I had very vivid dreams, and I've always could like go into people's dreams, but I thought everybody could do that, you know. I thought everybody could go into people's dreams and come back, and you know, I thought that was completely normal until when I got older, I realized that, you know, a lot of people were not doing that. So it was just coming into the terms that, you know, God kind of gifts everybody with different abilities. My spiritual journey really started when what really catapulted me to what I do right now, going full blown with my practices, was when Michael Brown had got shot by that police officer. That was when I got pulled out of this reality. That was when he got shot, and the weirdest thing happened. He got shot, and this girl out of nowhere came up to me and was like, "Did you hear about this guy getting shot?" And I was looking around like, you know, I knew her, but she just, it's like she drove to the mall to tell me this. And then I started like then just something just hit me with the police, and he had got shot. And he was laying in the street for 6 hours. I didn't even know that even could happen. Just the whole, everything just seemed out of place. Like the commissioner was coming out saying that he had did something, but I'm like, well, what does that have to do with him being shot in the street? So all this is happening and nothing's making sense to me. Like nothing, everything's all out of order. You know, this life was taken, and then you have people justifying why the life was taken. All this stuff, like this whole, all this stuff is just like going around me. And I literally just walked outside maybe 5 days after it had happened, and I walked outside and I looked up in the sky, and out of nowhere, I said to myself, "Wait a second. The sky is blue. It's always blue. Why is it blue? Wait, the sun comes out every single day. Why does the sun come out every single day? Why am I breathing? Wait, I'm breathing without any cords attached to me." So all this, and then I started going into this whirlwind of trying to find out about God and like all this stuff. It was that Michael Brown incident that led that like that pain. It was such pain witnessing that it just catapulted me into what I do right now.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Would you say more about how you see spirituality intersecting with healing practices?
Oh wow. I feel like I'm a really strong believer in well, I know, not a believer. I feel like when you get to a certain age, because I've experienced, you know, my ancestors, you know, being around me, their spirit, you know, seeing them in my dreams, seeing them in awakened states, you know, knowing that they're there. But before the Michael Brown incident was there, I was like in a cocoon of blindness. So after that happened, I feel like the spirit, the spirituality is important because that is the unseen energy that affects a lot of people, especially the humans that come to me. they get caught up in what they see in front of them, the materialistic things, that they don't realize that that energy of that spirit is what's causing maybe them to be ill, or they have the spirits that are actually trying to assist them in their recoveries. I believe that it's a huge part. I would say during the healing process, I would say 70% of it is the spirituality.
Do you remember when you first heard about COVID-19?
I first heard about COVID-19 when I first heard about COVID-19. So I would have to say I first heard about the coronavirus first. And that was, I heard about the coronavirus because there were people saying, you know, the Corona beer. And the coronavirus, because I was raised on a farm growing up, that wasn't odd. It was just something that, you know, the animals got. It was a regular like cold. It wasn't anything that was serious. I mean, you got sick or whatever. So when it was the coronavirus, it was like, you know, it was just the coronavirus, you know, a corona. So the word got changed to COVID. Because a lot of people were not taking, you know, the word got changed to COVID because a lot of people were aware of the coronavirus from, especially if you lived on the farm. That wasn't odd. So the name just got changed to COVID.
What were some of your early impressions?
Of what?
Of hearing about the coronavirus circulating and it coming up in sort of context outside of the farm.
So my earlier, when it started coming out, it was triggering for me. It was triggering when I was in school and when I was in school, I was taught about the Nazis and Hitler and the things that certain powers do to keep, you know, the population under control and fear, to keep them working, to keep them in control. So when it kept changing. And then it was triggering memories of things. It was like it felt like it was a pattern of everything that I was taught in school just being recirculated. You know, I do remember that. I remember the strong feeling of how the Nazis had got into power and how the control had started with that type of fear, and then they started with that, and then they started implementing all types of control. That was right in the beginning that I felt that energy. That was my impressions with that.
That's so interesting. I would love to learn more about what you learned about the Holocaust in high school.
So I learned that you know, when you get older as a child, you know, you're just told what the writer of the, you know, of the material observation of what, you know, what they wrote, what they saw. And then some of the stuff was, you know, commentary of the actual people who were there in their, you know, oral interviews. And then some were from whoever was there wrote from their perspective. So how I took it of my teachers teaching me about it was there was a guy that got into power and did these things. And from my perspective as a child, it was just him. it wasn't a group of people. It was just him, and he had all the control, because that was from a child's eye. I was told that this guy, Hitler, you know, like by himself, this is my mentality as a child in school, because I'm going back there, had killed like 2 million Jews because they were different, you know. That's what I was taught. I was taught mostly it was the Jews were just being killed. As I got older, I realized there was a lot more people that got killed. It, you know, it wasn't just Hitler. It was a group of people that believed in his message, and he was just doing what the group wanted him to do.
What were some of the early resonances that you were feeling between what you'd learned about World War II and what you were seeing at the beginning of the pandemic?
So in the beginning, I was seeing a lot of propaganda. The same thing I felt as a, you know, growing up as a kid, the books were saying they started with propaganda, and the propaganda started, and then they used fear. It was always fear. That was the underneath everything. You get people in fear, and then you can get them to move in a certain way. You can get them to do things from fear, and you can get them to do things that other people they normally wouldn't do if the fear wasn't there. But it's the fear that they put into the people. The constant stuff on, when I was a child, they did a lot of stuff in the news. They spoke bad about certain classes that didn't move and didn't do what the other people were supposed to do, because the government said they were supposed to do it. And it was all really the same. It's what I was seeing. And it was like, oh, wow. You know, yeah.
What are some of the reactions you noticed in other people around you?
So in reference to the COVID, the people who I was around, because I was very, I didn't portray a lot of fear. So when I was around them, they didn't have a lot of fear. Like I was saying in the beginning, if they did have any fear, I reminded them of who they were. You know, what is your purpose in life? You know, you can still achieve it. You know, what's going on in your life right now? You know, are you looking at something so far outside of yourself and you're bringing it into yourself, and that's not your experience? The people around me were very, like I said, they prospered. I mean, like they bought houses, you know, met people, got, you know, married. It's just a list of wonderful things that happen to people. Yeah.
What brought you to energy work?
So in the beginning of the energy work, it was, I guess, my ego, because I felt like I did have an ability. And when people came to me for my practices, you know, they felt better. And then, you know, they would send me their testimonies, how they have healed. But, you know, all healing is self-healing. You know, in the beginning, that's what kept me going. But I realized all healing is self-healing. I'm just here to assist them in front of me. But in the beginning, it was just a strong sense of helping people. But not only that, seeing my potential in the practice of energy work, you know, and how important energy is. And, you know, energy is, you know, emotions. Energy is the unseen force that you cannot see. It is the spirit, is the energy, you know. But, you know, that's what moved me into doing it. And just really finding out more about myself and others. And doing this practice, I really realize, I know we're all one.
Could you describe sort of generally your client base?
Oh, they're from the ages of 18 all the way. I think my eldest client was 97. My clients come with illnesses, disease. Then some people come for consciousness awareness. They've had mystical experiences. Some people come because they've had abductions. What some people might call an alien abductions. I get everybody that comes, and I do not turn away anyone. Nobody gets turned away. I'm here to help everybody.
How do you go about creating a environment where your clients are comfortable and able to share these things with you?
It's my personality. I'm non-judgmental. I wholeheartedly practice removing, you know, I wholeheartedly practice removing certain vocabularies, words out of my vocabulary, like good, bad, right, and wrong. By removing those out of my vocabulary, I'm able to ask the person, you know, what's underneath that, you know, versus just, and not judging anybody. When someone comes, they have a safe place to talk and to release whatever energy, or to go inward to discover or to see more of what they came to see. But just not judging, you know, and knowing that that person is here for information, to seeking, or they want to be healed and they want to go inward to heal themselves, because they've been going to doctors and the doctors couldn't do anything. They've been on the pills and tired of the pills. They've been on the drugs. And they realize they constantly have to take the drugs. They want to self-heal.
You'd mentioned that there had been activists in Tennessee helping to keep businesses open. What was lockdown like when it happened?
I really don't recall any lockdowns, like, because I was going to work. We had customers, you know. I recall certain businesses, if they did want to shut down, they shut down. You know what I'm saying? When Tennessee, where we live, because every county is different. This is my county, you know. In my county, I remember they were trying to implement things in other cities that were not our city. And the people stood up and were like, no, that's not going to happen here. And we all just rallied together and, you know, everybody just used their own judgments in the situation. They went off whatever they felt was best for their families. I remember me and my husband, not to go too far off your question about the activists, and that's what I meant about activists. They were actively, we came as a group actively for one cause, to make sure that the power stayed with the people. And that was, everybody had their own choice and how they wanted to, what they wanted to do. I do remember me and my husband did I remember my husband, we did make a point to go to our local businesses to buy stuff every day. And I do remember three businesses, I think maybe 3 months, they wrote us letters and said how they appreciate us. But they didn't realize we were doing it because we realized that was important. But we realized that, you know, if you want your community to stay open, you have to still be a part of it. You still have to not stay in fear. You still have to make sure that the, you know, the employees can have a job. You know, we knew how important that was. So, you know, we got like three letters from, I guess the employees must have told them about us. So that was really cool. You know, yeah.
To the extent that you're comfortable sharing, would you say something about your own experiences of health and healthcare infrastructure pre-COVID?
So before I became an energy therapist, and before that, I used to be really, really into I used to be really into Western medicine, like always going to the doctor's appointments, always like anything that a doctor said was they were just the gods. I didn't think nothing about it until I actually gave birth to a child. He's passed, but I gave birth to the child and I was told he was only going to make it for 30 days. And I was told that he was only going to live for 30 days. And I remember saying, you know what, who has that power? He can live longer. So I signed up for every single program. And then I found out my rights as you know, a sovereign being, that the doctors work for you. And in that, if a doctor told me my son couldn't have a surgery, I knew the policies to get them to do the surgeries. I knew the policy they had to do everything because they worked for me. And then, so before I was 100% trusting. And then when I actually got into the system, then I understood that they were not gods. I understood that I just understood they just were not gods anymore. And my son did die. He did pass. But he made it to almost four. But at that point, when he was like two, the doctors were like, there's nothing we can do because he was two and he only weighed like, he never got past like 18. He never got past 20 pounds. So it was me and my energy keeping him alive. Kind of like if you had somebody on a ventilator and you're just constantly keeping them on the ventilator, that's what I was doing, you know? But when my dad, so that happened. And then when my dad had got cancer, then I really realized, wait a second, there's a lot more to health. You know, the doctors couldn't do anything. And I was seeing, there's something missing from here. There was something unplugged. There was a disconnect from that and my dad's, like there was some disconnect. And that's when I got into when he died, that's when I really didn't when he actually died was when I started investigating more about, you know, foods and natural medicines. And that, you know, I was so into, if it was a pill or a medicine from the doctors, that's all there was. There was not anything else. It was not even a thought until I got thrown into those situations.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
When I think of the word health, I think of breath. I think of the breathing, the life, just that breath, the breath that keeps the consciousness going. You know, whether that's it doesn't have to be like this extravagant body. It just has to be a space to where that breath is coming in, and you still have a consciousness to experience.
Have you been paying much attention to, and if so, what have you noticed about sort of stories about healthcare workers over the course of the pandemic?
Oh, so the healthcare workers, that was very disheartening. With people having their own, someone having their own choice on what their spirit moves them to do, and their body and their inner self. And then someone taking that away from them, whatever someone feels, so that one of the young ladies I work with, she lived in California, and she was a nurse there, and she decided that, she didn't want to take the vaccine, and they let her go. And she just, just wasn't in her. She just made that choice. So I just felt like there was a lot of fear that, caused them to, just, with the nurses, it was just a lot of fear underneath that. I felt they were already working. They were working in the beginning, and if let them keep working. It's their choice, it's their body. I don't,
What does bodily autonomy mean to you?
Oh, that your body is your vehicle that keeps you, your body is your vehicle that keeps the breath going. For your consciousness, whether, I mean, you could have a body in a wheelchair or whatever. It doesn't, like I said, it doesn't matter. I just feel like your body is needed for the experience that you're choosing to do in this lifetime. If I want to go and set out at a lake, I need a an experience stuff here. That's, I feel like the body's important. The body and autonomy is very important, that everybody has an individual right to their own autonomy of their body, and not from someone's judgment or fear or somebody else's opinion of what they feel someone should do to their body from their understanding, or something they read from someone else's experience that that other person is not experiencing, or someone that is in pain or not healed, trying to direct somebody else on how their body should be. I just feel the body autonomy is really important.
Did you notice anything about your clients' needs changing during the pandemic?
No, they all came for the same thing. It was, they really came for the same thing. It was all, everybody, not everybody had their own individual reason of why they were coming to me. then it wasn't any different than before COVID or the COVID or after, you know, or the pandemic, you know. It was all the same thing. They were trying, they had an experience. They were either or had an illness, a disease, needed information. It was all this under the same categories.
And did anything about your practices and healing change? Did the room set up differently? Anything, or did the practices look the same?
They were all the same. Yeah, everything was the same. Nothing changed. Yeah, nothing changed with the practices or anything. People came for the same reasons. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. I only see one person, like when I do my practice, nobody's allowed to be in the room but that person. Even before that, the pandemic, that person's the only one that's allowed in here in my practice. So there was no, yeah, that's always been the case.
Love to hear more about your husband's work with affordable housing.
We worked together. We were seeing that, I don't know if it was just a precognition, but we were seeing that, something was going to happen and people were not going to be able to afford rent. So that was before this even, I had went back in March, but we had already had started, I want to say sometime in November or December, so the key thing that we wanted to do, we knew that something internally knew that something was going to happen and rent was going to be going up for people. And if rent goes up, people would want to move or go into an energy of lack and fear, because they, you know, the biggest thing that someone can do to someone to trigger fear is to get them in a mode to where they can't feel they can't survive. And if someone's in the mode of they feel they can't survive, they start doing things from that energy, creating policies, you know, maybe stealing, or just talking about the fear and the pain. And so we just started, you know, just buying properties and just keeping rents really affordable for people. And we just work and we do the labor. Like today, before I even did this interview, it's funny because people come up to me. I was out there in our truck, because it says, you know, we buy houses. And I was doing the landscaping there. And a lady came up to me and she was like, I explained to her, for me to keep the rents low, I have to do labor. Because if I pay somebody, how can I keep the rents low? So it's like, so it's just little things we do just to help our community. So, you know, the people will stay and keep the fear down.
What's the housing situation been like where you are?
So here, because we are in where I'm at, because we didn't have the lockdowns like other communities had, so our businesses prospered. So a lot of people move here. I mean, it's like thousands and thousands of people moved here. So our housing market is amazing. The prosperity here has really became amazing. But I think the precog, but buying the doing the affordable housing was when the people had flooded into our community and started buying property, rents did go up. So I guess, like I said, it was a precog that, you know, God was guiding us to do that, what we did. So rents had went up, but thank God we were able to help many people not have, you know, high rents and stuff. Because when people came in from, say, California, you know, they sold their house for, you know, $500,000. They come over here and they find a house that was $100,000, but then they set up there and they, I'm not set up there, they decided to pay $200,000 for it. So now the property values have went up. And now, you know, obviously if someone is trying to rent a house they paid $200,000 for, the rent's going to be a lot higher. So, but thankfully we got in, you know, and got ours a lot lower, and then to be able to assist people with the lower rent. And then, you know, we have a lot of people, older people, who are okay with selling us their house because they believe in our mission of the affordable housing too, to keep rents low. So, you know, people don't have to have that fear of housing or, you know, high rents.
Is the work you're doing in collaboration with the state? So is it something like Section 8 or is it entirely independent?
It's private. One of the reasons why it's private is because I remember when I was, so I was a teen mom. I got pregnant when I was 16. And I was 17 when I gave birth to her. And I had, you know, worked a job. I worked at McDonald's and Burger King. And I had saved my money. Like, I mean, I was penny pinching. Like, I was saved all my money. And then me and my family, we had moved to a different state. And I remember I was like, my mom, I got my own place and I was like, I'm going to go and apply for assistance, you know, and I went to go apply for assistance. And keep in mind, I had just saved my money, like, but I sacrificed, like, I literally went to Goodwill and wore the same outfit. Like, when I say I sacrificed to save. And I went to go apply for funding for food stamps because I had got my own place and I had a child and they didn't give it to me because they said I had saved my money because I had money in an account. And I was like, well, so I was supposed to blow all my money, you know, and that made me realize that it was a system and that not some people are like me who do need help that don't qualify for public assistance. Because they might say, like, how I got treated, you know, because I wanted to work. I didn't want to be on the system, but it was a cycle. So we try to create things where people don't, you know, removed our, you know, they have strict rules, you know, you have to meet a certain income to get their assistance. But, you know, some people make a little bit more, but they're still struggling. They're right at the edge of losing everything. So that's why we are private.
Are those experiences part of what brought you to care about and do work in affordable housing?
Definitely. Oh, definitely. 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 I do. That's the pain. When I was a single mom, I couldn't find daycare. Me and my husband, we get more. Our next goal is we bought a small apartment building, but we're going to buy a bigger one. Our goal is to have daycare in there and tutoring. So the, not only are their rents going to be affordable, but daycare, I mean, daycare almost literally would have bankrupted me when I had children. Like, it was like the biggest, my biggest, because I love my children, but I still had to feed them. It was like, so what do you do? I want to take that burden off of, if somebody needs that burden and they don't qualify for state assistance, you know, because you have to meet, you have to be a lower income to qualify, but somebody might just be, might not be low income, but still on the verge of losing everything. You know? Yeah. I want to be that person. Yeah.
Did you have any sort of COVID specific interactions with any of your tenants?
No. Could you elaborate on that question?
So you had talked about the sort of precognition of acquiring the housing. And then we were in this moment where like everything with rent did really go up in the air and became really chaotic. There were like a lot happened with rent. I feel like that's a really weird thing. but like a lot with housing happened in the last couple of years, both at the individual scale and that like people were terrified of eviction and were evicted, and like some people had really great landlords and things went really well. But I think that it was a moment where lots of conversations opened up between landlords and tenants because there was this possibility that one or both of those sides were in some kind of crisis. So I'm wondering if any of that emerged, if there was just sort of more back and forth conversation.
There was really no issue. Everybody paid. We didn't have anybody not pay their rent. We tell everybody our mission. We tell everybody. And I believe because they felt they were part of that mission, they kept it going. You know, I really feel if you tell everybody your intentions of why you do things and they believe in you, they will make sure that it keeps going. The only tenant that stands out that, and he only didn't pay for 2 months, but he paid it back. And that's because he had found out he had cancer. And he called me and he was like, I found out I have cancer, so I'm about to take out. And I was just told him, you know, take the time that you need. And he ended up paying it back. And this was during the COVID and the pandemic. He still paid it back because he believed in us. Yeah, he paid it back because he believed in us. And he appreciated us. I mean, the whole time he was telling me he's got cancer, and the whole time he's like, I cannot, you know, I'm not this type of person. I cannot believe I'm, you know, that I'm doing this. I don't normally do this. I normally don't humble. I normally always pay my bills. I mean, he was really like, and I'm thinking in my mind, he's got cancer. He's going to have to heal. I'm okay. You know, but he, you know, but that was the only one. That was the only one. Yeah. But we, yeah, that was the only one. But I, yeah, that was the only one.
You've mentioned a few times how where you were, things stayed pretty consistent pre and post COVID. I'm wondering what it was like watching different parts of the U.S. change. Did you have friends or family in other part of the country? And what was it like seeing what they were going through?
So a lot of my family lived here, so we still saw each other. It wasn't like we saw each other. There was no, we still did parties. We didn't do, there wasn't, there was really not huge changes. The only there were really no huge changes. And I want to also let you know, we don't watch television at all. We normally, so I want to make sure, we normally just go out. We normally, me and my husband, we normally do things, a lot of things outside. We're really focused on our practices and our businesses. And I think that was a really key that, you know, we didn't watch television and, you know.
What does the word safety mean to you?
Safety? When I think of the word safety, I think of keeping something inside of something. You keep it on the inside of something. And you don't let anything in. So that's what I think of the word safety, like something's inside of something and nothing can come in from the outside.
Is that maybe something like a fortress?
Or like a safe that you might put jewelry in, or, yeah, when I think of safety, I think of like a something you would put, you know, like you would put something in something and nothing or no one can go inside of it.
What are some of the things you do in consideration of your own safety?
So I don't keep, so when I don't, how do I say this? There's no fear. So there's no fear. So I just know that when I go outside or anything in my car driving or setting by, you know, go to a lake, or I'm outside and it's dark outside and I'm walking outside in the dark. I know that there's love and unconditional love around me, at all times. It's just unconditional love and a light, like a light's always around. It's in that light, there is no closure on that light. It's not in a box. The word safety for me is, I don't use that word. It's just unconditional love and light.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
The future? Oh my God, it's amazing. Oh my God. Let's go back to the pandemic. I saw so many more people be so compassionate. I saw, like, there was someone that came into where I worked at, and they said they had got stopped by the police, and normally they would have got a ticket, but the cop was like, it's okay. Like, they, I mean, it was just so much love, so many people that started valuing life. And it's happening now. So many people who thought they couldn't achieve things are thinking outside of the box now. They're traveling. They dye in their hair. They have always wanted to have pink hair. I mean, it's, oh my God, the growth that I've seen where I'm at from this experience and the people that I've been around has been amazing. I'm it's just amazing. Even my mother-in-law is a different person. Like her mentality, like, yeah.
Could you give me an example of what you're noticing in her mentality shift?
So before, she was, I want to say, kind of, I would say rigid, like black and white. And when that happened, she could actually go into the grays and see different perspectives. And she was sharing those perspectives. And an aspect of us thought that she was going to be scared, like when this happened, but it like did something different for her. Like she was out making a point, buying blankets and giving people blankets. She was out there on the, like, just like, yeah. I mean, just her talk of like the body autonomy, the choices, you know. Yeah, it was just so different, you know. Yeah, it's just really different.
What are you're right. You raised something really important, which is that the last few years have been a lot more than just COVID. There has been a lot going on. In addition to COVID, in addition to the work you've been doing in affordable housing, are there other issues that have been sitting with you in your mind and heart?
I think in the beginning, now it was just the fear. I remember it was just watching people in fear and not staying in love. I believe what bothered me now is so I was raised in Christianity, and I was told that, you know, you're always, God's always has a light over you, the blood of the Lamb, and all the people who told me this, and that's what I walked in, like, for sure. Like, I wasn't worried about anything. I was supposed to be the light, just like I was taught in church when I was a child. And then the people who I felt gave me that message went into this fear, and that threw me off. I'm like, I was more like, you taught me this, but you're not doing it. Because something got in, it was like a fear got in. And but I know that if I hadn't been on this path and Michael Brown hadn't happened to me, you know, if I hadn't experienced that awakening through the Michael Brown's death, I would have been in the same situation. I would have been buying all the toilet paper. We didn't buy no extra toilet paper. I would have been in fear. I wouldn't have been like telling people, you got this, you know, you're the light of the world. What are your goals? What do you need to do? You know, I that wouldn't have been me. I would have been in a cave. But so it was seeing all the work. I think what now is like seeing so much more work needs to be done. But then just holding the pace, the space for that piece, you know, like when I was telling you about the affordable housing, you know, if somebody doesn't have to worry about survival, can they focus on love? Can they focus on why they came into this lifetime? Can they focus on not being scared? You know, it's just that it was the fear, you know, that, yeah.
What are some of your hopes for a longer term future?
That that people walk into their power, that they are amazing, and they can contribute whatever they want to contribute, whether it's a smile or whether it's a new building that has wings that fly. I don't know. But that's just my hope, that people pull, like I was saying, Michael Brown pulled me out of eat, sleep, work, and oh my God, survival. Oh my God, I gotta survive. You know, all this stuff. It was constant that, like, that's my hope, that everybody's pulled from that to where they can focus on experience life to its fullest. Cause it's amazing when you're at this level and you're at that fullness of life, to where you are really at the purpose of why you came into this lifetime. It feels amazing.
What are some of the things you do to take care of yourself?
Oh my God, I love myself unconditionally. I speak highly of myself. I love others. I eat food, but I really focus on eating food with light, which is raw vegetables. I meditate a lot of meditation. Just a lot of love for myself and a lot of love for others, unconditional love for others and unconditional love for myself, and the breath. Just staying in that moment and just taking in that breath, you know, and enjoying that breath, you know, the breath, that is just amazing. I mean, that's how I take self-care. All the other stuff that I used to do before I found that power of the nails, the hair, the clothes, that was a never-ending cycle. I mean, I feel, you know, enjoy those things, but it's not the same anymore. That's just a choice to do. Before, it felt like an obligation. Yeah.
Where did you learn about unconditional love?
So I'm going to tell you the first time I heard about unconditional love, but I didn't grasp it until the Michael Brown incident. The first time I knew, I believed in unconditional love, was the story of Jesus Christ. When God gave his son for man's sins, to love something so much and to take it away so people can see, to have that love and to take that energy away from love. I thought that was the most amazing thing, so people can feel loss, so they could feel the pain of wanting to change. Because sometimes change come through pleasure, and sometimes people only can change through pain, AKA the pandemic, you know. For me, my pain was the Michael Brown incident. So Jesus Christ was the first time I actually heard the story of unconditional love. But it wasn't until I actually got into the Michael Brown incident happened, and when I started exploring the unconditional love, which was when I had looked up in the sky and I had asked, you know, the sky, the sun, and I am moving without a cord. I am walking without a cord. Something is fueling me to walk. This breath, something is energizing me. No matter what I decide to do, it's going to keep energizing me and loving me. And that's when I really grasp that power of unconditional love, of the consciousness, the consciousness of that love. And it's not just the body, it's not just the breath. It's just more of the trees. You know, I went outside and I saw that there was a sun there. Something brought that sun there for us to have this experience. That's unconditional love. It comes out every single day. That's the fabric of that. I didn't even pay attention to it. I didn't pay attention to the clouds. I didn't pay attention that every spring, the flowers came out on a rotation. There's no conditions to that. You know, that's just it just does it because it's just no conditions on it. And then I said, I could do that too in a human form. So I started walking in it, you know, and that's why when you had asked about the income, when you had asked about the people who come to see me, I put no conditions on anybody because I want to walk in that same path of unconditional love. And it feels amazing when you let go, when you trust, you know. It feels great.
I want to thank you so much for the generosity of your time and the grace of your answers. Those are all of the questions I sort of know how to ask at this moment, but I'd love to open some space if there's anything you'd like to share that my questions haven't made room for.
I did want to just say about this whole incident with the pandemic, I just saw so much love. I mean, when I say love, we grew so much mentally, physically. The people, we met so many amazing people. And it just brought out, like, I feel like that fear, some people, the fear had to come to the surface, just like dirt on the bottom of a pool, that when it surfaced, when somebody's there, they can help wipe it and clean it to where it can't go back down and surface back up again. I just felt like everybody had their own choices and every choice was the right choice for them. And they made it. And, you know, then some people make choices out of fear and they regretted it. But guess what? They can always start back over. You know, as long as they have that consciousness and that love and the breath, you know, they can always start back over. If they went into fear and the fear took them down to a dark place. That's really it. And I did want to say thank you for allowing me to speak my experience. I know so many other people have maybe the same exact experience, a different experience, but it's good to have everybody's experience through this, whatever they chose to be heard. And I thank you for that.
Thank you so much.